Hi, my name's Mark Linus. I'm a science writer and environmental campaigner and the author of the new book, 6 Minutes to Winter, Nuclear War and How to Avoid It, published by Bloomsbury. I remember when I started writing the book, everyone told me it sounded depressing. Even my agent said that. I know what they meant, of course, but my response was that just ignoring such a catastrophic risk is no solution either. That's not how we tackle climate change, which is another area I've worked on for many years. So I'm going to share with you 5 key insights from my book that I hope you can take away from it without getting too depressed. Here goes. Number 1, we are living at a particularly dangerous time. Nuclear war is now a real possibility due to the geopolitical instability of our times, meaning that we are now as close to the brink as at any stage since perhaps the Cuban Missile Crisis in 1962. The risk of nuclear war obviously fluctuates, but has been calculated at 1% per year given the near misses and ongoing superpower brinkmanship. 1% doesn't sound like a lot, but adds up to a cumulative probability of about 2/3 over a century. Given that nuclear weapons were invented and first used in 1945, our children therefore might have a less than evens 50-50 chance of living to 2045 without a nuclear Armageddon. It's particularly urgent right now because virtually all the old arms control treaties dating back to the Cold War have collapsed. The final one, the New START Treaty, will expire next February. Meanwhile, China's aiming for nuclear parity with the US and Russia. They've got about 500 warheads now and are aiming for 1,000 by 2030. Hardened missile silos are appearing now across the deserts of northern China. Iran's probably going to get a bomb within months or weeks if the US and Israel attack their nuclear sites. Russia showed clearly in Ukraine that nuclear weapons are still useful for wars of aggressive conquest, even if you don't actually use them, because their deterrent effect reduces pushback from the rest of the world. India and Pakistan are again close to war over Kashmir, and both have nuclear weapons collectively numbering in the hundreds. The most crazily dangerous aspect of all this is that we have thousands of nuclear weapons on hair trigger alert. In the US nuclear posture, the president has sole launch authority, which means that he has to consult no one, and no one in the chain of command has the authority to refuse a direct presidential launch order. He also only has an estimated 6-minute decision window to decide whether to launch a retaliation if an enemy attack is detected. This means that the president has 6 minutes to decide whether to unleash a nuclear war that will destroy the human race and much of the biosphere when the incoming missiles are just blips on a radar screen. This, of course, hugely raises the possibility of a catastrophic error, and indeed such near misses have happened several times over the decades due to faulty software, personal misinterpretations, and computer glitches. Perhaps the scariest near miss was during the Cuban Missile Crisis itself, on Black Saturday, 27th of October 1962, which came after both Kennedy and Khrushchev had decided they both wanted to back away from the confrontation. What happened was that a Soviet submarine was forced by the American Navy to surface quite near to the exclusion zone Kennedy had declared around Cuba. The Americans didn't know that this sub had a nuclear-tipped torpedo, and when they harassed it with depth charges and machine gun fire, the Soviet captain decided to dive and launch the device, which would have initiated nuclear war. Fortunately, the signaller got stuck in the conning tower, and the superior officer who was also on board was delayed long enough that he was able to see that the Americans were signalling an apology and was able to call off the launch. Now that was a pretty close shave. Number 2, nuclear war would be almost unthinkably bad. Imagine a zombie apocalypse, but worldwide and for real. In a nuclear exchange between America and Russia, burning most of the cities of the Northern Hemisphere, an estimated 700 million people would die in the initial blasts and firestorms. These are people mostly burned alive or vaporized on the spot if they're lucky. It includes another few tens of millions who die from fatal radiation poisoning in the first few days and weeks. Their hair falls out and their gut lining shears off, leading to septicemia and multiple organ failure. It's not a nice death. But that's just the beginning. What happens next is far worse, and it's what gives my book its title, 6 Minutes to Winter. Nuclear winter was a concept first discovered in the 1980s when scientists realized that the soot particles from burning cities would end up in the stratosphere, above the weather-generating layer of the atmosphere and would therefore stay for months and even years blocking out the sun. Recent climate models have shown that nuclear winter is very much a reality and that food production would shut down overnight as a period of near total darkness led to ice age temperatures returning for most of the globe for the best part of a decade. Photosynthesis would stop, and our breadbasket food-producing areas would freeze solid. This would cause a nuclear famine, and virtually the whole populations of the combatant nations would starve. That's what I mean when I talk about zombie apocalypse. Picture the scene of literally billions of shell-shock survivors, roaming the land in search of food as they gradually starve to death. It's worse than a horror movie because this could actually happen to all of us and our families and kids unless we do something quickly to de-escalate the current nuclear confrontation. I know it's almost unimaginable, but I'm asking you to imagine it because it's the only way to ensure that it never happens. Perhaps the closest analogue for the effects of a full-scale nuclear war is the asteroid that destroyed the dinosaurs and caused the mass extinction at the end of the Cretaceous 66 million years ago. That also caused a worldwide firestorm that put so much soot in the atmosphere that it went totally dark at the surface and led to freezing temperatures across the whole globe. Of course, there was nothing the dinosaurs could have done to prevent this. And because we're smarter than them, we now have a NASA-led program to detect, and if necessary deflect, planet-threatening asteroids. But how clever are we really if we build and design our own asteroids and point them directly at our own cities in the form of intercontinental ballistic missiles tipped with thermonuclear warheads? Number 3. Nuclear war is a more catastrophic, immediate risk even than climate change. Climate warming is a cumulative problem that will harm the planet over decades as ice caps melt, heat waves intensify, and food production is harmed. But there is still time to adapt to many of the impacts and lessen their intensity as we transition away from fossil fuels towards clean energy. In comparison, nuclear war can destroy the biosphere and human civilization in a matter of hours, and there are no conceivable adaptation or even survival options for most of the human population. This puts nuclear war in a special category as by far our worst and most urgent existential risk. It's worse than pandemics, which we can hope to control with mitigation measures and vaccines. It's worse than any negative, realistic outcome with AI, although, of course, the worst thing that anyone can imagine, as was the fictional scenario in the Terminator films, is AI taking control of nuclear weapons and using them to exterminate most of humanity. In which case, we're back to the real threat of nuclear weapons themselves. Number 4. Any nuclear war is unlikely to be a limited affair. If you destroy New York or Shanghai, do you think there would be no retaliation? You always have to punish an aggressor. Our whole moral code depends upon it. So you wipe out two cities and their national capital for good measure. Then the wounded enemy responds with their full force. The whole process would probably play out in less than an hour, far too quickly for anyone to fully understand what is even going on. So, we have to reduce the current risk of catastrophic miscalculation by taking all nuclear weapons off hair trigger alert. It doesn't make sense to ask the US president or anyone to decide whether or not to end civilization in a 6-minute time window. Of course, there is no scenario where the use of nuclear weapons makes sense, which is why we need to get rid of them. Make no mistake, humanity will not survive long term unless we abolish nuclear weapons. It's either us or them. All of this is why global zero is actually the only option. If any country has a nuclear weapon, you need a nuclear weapon too for deterrence. Therefore, everyone needs nuclear weapons, you get an arms race, and sooner or later, the human race destroys itself. The only way out of this collective action dilemma is for nobody to have a nuclear weapon, not one. Number 5. At this point, a lot of people say it's impossible and that it will never happen. Fine, then you're rolling the dice with a 2/3 risk of ending the world. Also, I remember a time when it was also declared impossible that we would ever get serious about tackling climate change. I know this is not a solved problem, but when I began my first climate book back in 2000, there were no electric cars, solar power was impossibly expensive, wind was a joke, and grid-scale batteries didn't even exist. We now have serious climate targets for most of the world's big economies, and most experts believe that the clean energy transition is already unstoppable. So don't tell me a problem is impossible to solve. Nuclear weapons involve just 9 states, while climate change involves the entire energy basis of modern life. To get to abolition, I believe we've got to recreate the anti-nuclear movement, but to do so in a fundamentally different way from the past. This can't be a left-wing peace movement. It needs to be politically diverse and to include conservative and liberal perspectives equally. After all, no sane person is actually in favour of collective suicide. It also needs to be anti-nuclear only in the sense of opposing weapons, not nuclear power. Far too many green groups have got this backwards. We actually need nuclear power stations, both to tackle climate change and ultimately to burn up decommissioned nuclear warheads in their fuel. In fact, because the resulting energy is carbon-free, we would be helping solve the climate crisis as we solve the nuclear weapons threat at the same time. And actually, it's already the official policy of the United Nations to have nuclear abolition, thanks to the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons. The TPNW was adopted in 2017 and entered into force in 2021. It has 93 signatories and 70 full state parties. That's nearly half the world. And in its Article 1, each state party undertakes never to develop, test, produce, possess, transfer, use, or threaten to use nuclear weapons under any circumstances. My conclusion is this. We can't stop wars, but we can stop a war that destroys the biosphere. Presidents Gorbachev and Reagan realized this perfectly well when they met in 1985 and issued a statement saying that nuclear war cannot be won and therefore should never be fought. Logically, if you can't fight the war, you don't need the weapons. So the only way to fulfill that is to get to total abolition. This isn't net zero, it's global zero. Thanks for listening, and I hope you can join me in believing that a world free from the threat of nuclear war is possible if we work together and demand it.